If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, I'm Carol Gold, and welcome to Above the Fray podcast. Our number here is 914-803-4522, and of course, we welcome your calls because we care what you think about the subjects that we think are important. I'm here with my delightful co-host, Steve Clark. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Carol.
And we're going to talk tonight about immigration, legal and otherwise, but also migration. Also refugees and what's happening across Europe and here in the United States. And what prompted this subject tonight is that I saw an article this morning that in Germany, where they have set up temporary housing camps, if you will, I think they're actually called asylum centers. Steve, did you read that article, and is that what they're called?
I did read the article. I don't remember that being called that, but well, it very well could be.
Let's just call them refugee centers, where they are housing all of the refugees / migrants that are coming from the Middle East, coming from Serbia, coming from those countries that are experiencing allegedly strife, but in some cases simply economic hardship. And what I read is that Christian refugees are being physically accosted, assaulted. They are being bullied. They are being spat upon. They are being threatened with death by the Muslim refugees. Now, picture this. We've got refugees who are both Christian and Muslim, and they've all managed to get themselves to Germany, who has graciously, or whether intelligently or not, but certainly graciously agreed to allow them in. And the Muslims are harassing, in some cases actually assaulting Christians, to the point where one or two families that I read, Christian families, decided to return to Mosul in Iraq. Now, understand that Mosul is now completely under control of ISIS, the last I heard. So it begs the question, what is the mindset, what is the intention and the mindset of these refugees that are coming from Muslim countries? And of course, here we have it as well. We have illegal immigration across our southern border that is happening pretty much unobstructed. And we have candidates who are running for office who don't, in some cases, in some candidates, certainly not the ultra-conservative Republican candidates, but other candidates, some of whom are Republican, who are in favor of continued illegal immigration by whatever name. And so I personally think that what's happening in Europe and what's happening here, although more in Europe than here, is orchestrated. It's orchestrated to spread chaos, well, to create chaos and to spread Islam throughout Europe in order to destabilize it and have it eventually be part of what we have now come to know as the caliphate, a large body of land, whether it's a nation like Iraq or whether it's all of Europe governed by Sharia law. So, Steve, it's a quandary in a way, because I also talked to a friend today who said, you know, we have to be careful not to harbor ill feelings toward all Muslims, because think of all of the millions and millions of peace-loving, good Muslims that are out there that aren't part of this strategy that's happening across Europe. And while I know in my heart, as a spiritual person, that is a true statement, it's very hard right now when you see statistics that say that 57% of the Muslims in the United States think Sharia is better than the U.S. Constitution. It's very hard to segregate in your mind those Muslims who are not part of this wave of mass migration, with most of them being young men of between 20 and 35 they are 70-some percent of the migrants that are coming into Europe. Very hard to distinguish in your mind and in your heart, more so in your mind, I guess, the difference between the two and where we draw the line, because at what point are we at risk. So I've laid it all out there, Steve. Pick up any point along the way that you want to you know, take it there from and go.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to touch on the interesting thing that I've been reading over the following weekend, is that it was an interesting narrative that I picked up on some of the conversations, that many of the European leaders are not so concerned about the immigration issue. What they're more concerned about is the rise of the political right in Europe. And it begs the question that we face here in the U.S. is that, if you look at it, really, you know, Ann Coulter laid out in her latest book that really what concerns, you know, the political parties is that, you know, here in the U.S., the immigration problem is actually something that would benefit a political party, a Democratic Party, because they know that eventually, if they assimilate those people in, that eventually they'll just have them voting Democrat, and you won't have a two-party system, but a one-party system. So I found it quite interesting that it's the same concern in Europe, that what they're worried about is the rise of the political right, that you would have leaders that, you know, along the lines of a Trump, that would rise up in France, Germany, and some of these countries, and that would, you know, basically take away the left's power in those countries. Essentially, Europe has been run by a leftist socialist mentality, in what the immigrants that are coming into the country obviously would vote along the leftist and socialist sides, but really what they're getting concerned about is the rise of the political right.
Well, because it isn't, Steve, let me just interrupt one second here, and please hold on to your point. It isn't just the immigrants that will cause that shift. Whenever nationalism is threatened, whenever a nation's culture and its existence is threatened, it's always to the right that the political perspective gets moved, because it's always kind of a hunkered down, conservative, let's take care of our own kind of mentality. Here in the United States, we're used to calling that the right-wing conservatives, but in Europe, those are the fascists. That's what the right is in Europe. It's fascism. And so it isn't just the immigrants. It's what the immigrants are causing that will also cause the populace, I think, to move to the right. I'm sorry, Steve. I just needed to get that out.
No, I mean, it is a distinction, and it's an important distinction. But I found what interested me most is that, you know, the disconnect that we have between the governed and the governing. And it seems like it's the widest that it's ever been. There just doesn't seem to be any concern for the average common man in their frustrations and their struggles that they have. And it seems like it's getting worse. It's, you know, going back to Trump, I know we've beaten this horse up, but, you know, Trump wouldn't have a candidacy if the issues of the common man had been addressed. If you look at the media, you know, a guy like Rush Limbaugh or Michael Savage would have no audience if their concerns were being addressed by the media. So I just find it to be, again, I think it's going to culminate in something that neither the populace nor the population nor the governed are going to understand. Because you can't have this mass migration into these countries without having some really heavy backlash and some heavy consequences for it. I think what's going to happen is you're really going to have like the law of unintended consequences, that you're going to see backlashes and uprisings that nobody's going to be ready for.
Well, I do think someone's ready for it. I think, quite honestly, that the UN that's meeting this week on their global, you know, they're having this global meeting that's taking place. I think it started today, actually. And this is not conspiracy talk, what I'm about to say. It truly is about a one world vision. And I think those in every country, the governments in every country, whether it's the some of the political class here or whether it's in England or whether it's in Germany, wherever they are, I really believe there are a certain percentage of in every single country that are on this bandwagon for a one-world government. And as I like to say and always so let me finish the thought there. They're the ones who are ready for the unintended consequences. They actually will thrive from rebellion and chaos because they'll be able to bring down the heavy hammer of militarism to quell the unrest in these countries that is being stirred by this mass migration. So I think there are people who are ready for what's coming. I don't think the average person is ready for what's coming. And in fact, I had an interesting meeting this week. I'm Jewish, as our listeners know, but I'm attempting to organize the Christian ministers, the Christian pastors, the churches in the city in which I live, to all unite and bring in a speaker, someone who is currently in the process of saving lives, bringing families out of Syria, out of Iraq, bringing Christian families out of Syria and out of Iraq, those who are marked for death. So the interesting part of this discussion was, before I met with this particular pastor, who is the pastor of the largest congregation in the city in which I live, before I met with him, I had reached out to several rabbis, I had reached out to several other ministers, pastors, whatever, and I was getting a similar response from all of them. And it ranged from, well, we'll take this up with the board next year. Of course, how many will be dead by the time the board meets next year? Or I would get, well, this isn't really, you know, we're focused on a different kind of social justice. We're focused on food banks in our city. And I would say, well, if you stack sex slavery and beheading against food banks, I grant you they can all be social justice issues, but there has to be a prioritization. And clearly beheading and sex slavery needs to come first before we do food bank, if we're talking about literally saving lives. So having set that background, I met with this pastor of the largest congregation. And when I laid out the situation of the Christians in the Middle East, as I understand it, those that are being hunted and slaughtered by ISIS, and my plan to bring in this speaker and have all of the congregations unite in bringing him in and presenting his story of what he's in the middle of doing and helping these families, the pastor said to me something that it shocked me only for his honesty. The content didn't shock me, but his honesty did. He said, you know, most of what you're telling me, I'm not aware of. Now think about this. I'm a Jew sitting in front of a Christian pastor. I'm telling him the plight of Christians in the Middle East, and he's telling me that most of what I'm telling him, he's unaware of. And he said to me, I'll tell you why. I'm one of those people you just described. People either think it isn't imminent, it isn't that important, like the train tracks going into Auschwitz. Nobody wanted to really acknowledge they were there. He said, I had to shut it out because there's so much on my plate and there's so much in my mind and there's so much I have to do here with my own congregation. I just kind of tuned it out. And he said to me, I want to thank you. And the end of the story is he's organizing a meeting of the ministers and pastors of all of the area churches, and they're bringing me in to sell this idea of bringing in this speaker. So I bring all this up because there is a... When you said, Steve, you think people are unprepared for the unintended consequence, and I responded that I think that there is a preparation. It's just not among the average person. The preparation is among the elite who intend to make the most of this opportunity to garner even more power, even more money, even more exclusivity for themselves at the expense of the populace, at the expense of people around the world. My deep concern is that we, the average person, like that pastor, is so overwhelmed in our own lives in just trying to keep up that we don't realize truly the literal words that every generation has to step up for some reason, and this is ours. And I really am concerned because our failure to step up now will be magnified 100-fold had the United States, or England first and the United States second, not stood up against Hitler. Hitler didn't have social media. He didn't have nuclear weapons. He didn't have biological and chemical weapons. If he did, he only had them at the most rudimentary stages, and he had no delivery systems. The failure this time to confront the darkness in the world can bring about a lot faster than global warming or any green issue anyone may have on the left will bring about the demise, maybe not of the planet, but of certainly every living thing on the planet. And I don't know what more to do. You know, Steve, we do this show, we write a blog post, I do another show where, you know, I do inspirational and intuitive guidance for people. I write to my website. I'm working on another book. You and I published a book on the spiritual aspect, the energy of money, meaning what's really behind money, not just the greed of having it, but what is the principle behind it. I mean, some people are dancing as fast as they can dance, and yet it doesn't seem to be enough. And I want to close with this, Steve, and I'll give it back to you. You reference Trump, and you say that he wouldn't have, you know, he wouldn't be where he was had he not addressed the issues of the common person. I'm not sure it's that, Steve, as much as it is that everyone is so fed up with deceit and dishonesty and fraud that they are enamored with his authenticity. Whether or not what he stands for, not just what he's speaking about now, but what he has stood for in his life, whether or not that lines up with our personal values, it doesn't really matter. What people are enamored with, like with Barack Obama, he was black, he was articulate, he was young, he was charismatic. Donald Trump is the real deal. He's the real Donald. I don't think he's presidential material, but he's so appealing because we're so hungry for truth and authenticity. And I know you and I try to give it here, Steve, but I think there are a dangerous amount of people still asleep.
Yeah, 2 points that I want to touch on. The first is, you know, getting back to the Trump analogy, I think it's right on. One of the things that I found fascinating was, I don't know if you saw this about a week ago when somebody went to speak and before, you know, an audience member said, you know, he started to criticize Obama and Trump didn't say anything. And the typical narrative was, why didn't Trump stop him? And why, you know, the Republicans said, oh, he was bad for not, you know, not stopping the man when he said that Obama was a Muslim. And the left went out, look at Trump for not saying anything. And Trump made a very frank point. He's like, if somebody would criticize me, you think anybody would come and defend me? And it was just that type of frankness and honesty that, you know what, that's how a typical tough guy would say something like that. Why should I defend that guy? I mean, he's just another human being. If you and I, Carol, are in a restaurant, somebody says a jerky thing, what are we supposed to do, defend every single person? I just found it to be a really fresh, touching moment of honesty that the press, for some reason, just has completely has no sense of idea how the common man thinks. I just thought it was such an illuminating point by the press to get upset over something that's ridiculous. Some guy said something stupid, okay, and then Trump gets attacked for it. So I just thought it was really a really insightful point on the press. The second thing that I just wanted to address is getting back to, you know, the show topic for tonight about the mass immigration. And the mass immigration that I think is one of the big things that's not being talked about, especially in light of when the Pope came here, was the criticism of the U.S. In veiled terms of why don't we bring in more immigrants. And the question, you know, is why doesn't, you know, countries like Mexico, Honduras, Nicaragua, Ecuador, Venezuela do things to raise the standard of living of people in their country so they're not forced to leave their homeland? They're not forced to, you know, walk through the desert and take these horrendous trips to immigrate here illegally. The same
I can
way,
answer your question. I can answer your question. You just raised the question. Can I answer it?
Sure. Go ahead.
Because the Pope, who comes from those countries, but who chastises us for the way we live here, comes from crony capitalism at its worst. The reason that those countries don't elevate the condition for their citizens, and you will know this better than me because you are married to an Ecuadorian and because you have strong ties to South America, that is crony capitalism in its ugliest form. And they have no incentive to raise the standard of living because a certain elite class are benefiting from it, and the ones who are starving to death from it have no voice, they have no say, they have no representatives that have any power to do anything about it. And in fact, it's on their back, is it not, that those elites stay in power? That's what your question is an honest question. I know where it's coming from. It's coming from logic. Why don't they? But the answer is the very thing the Pope is promoting, which is the sense of political oneness, that you can solve this problem through socialism, is ridiculous because it doesn't ever solve the problem. There's no political solution to what we suffer from. It's greater than that. It's a solution of human consciousness and human heart. Politics is part of the game. It's part of the illusion. It's not part of the solution.
Yeah, but you know, I understand that, but I find it really despicable, you know, getting back to the Trump issue. You know, when Univision comes on and here's this guy just lambasting Trump for his immigration policy, but here's the clear case. The guy left his country, one of the, you know, let's call it one of the best and brightest of Mexico, comes and lives here in the U.S. and comes here to critique the U.S. Where's that harsh criticism of the Mexican government? Where is that? You know where it is? It's like this false narrative. It's this false tough bravado. Let me tell you, in Mexico, you know what happens to the people in the press that ask those hard questions? They get killed. So it's very easy. You know, these guys come over here, and it's very easy to go and criticize the U.S. It's very easy to, when they see these horrendous images of dead, you know, dead people washing ashore in Europe. It's very easy to criticize the leaders, saying why aren't they doing enough? But you know, the fact of the matter is there's a whole population of people that are absolutely doing nothing, that are completely, you know, taking advantage of their people. And here, people in the West, when I'm including Western Europe in this, are looking at ways to alleviate the problem, and the West all they get for it is a criticism. It makes no sense to me, and I find it despicable, actually.
I agree with you that it makes no sense, but I would like to, if I could, go back to your example of Trump and when he didn't defend Obama to that questioner. And then Trump's response was, well, you think if Obama said something about me, if somebody said something about me, Obama would have defended me. It's not my job to defend him. You find that answer appealing. I find that answer cocky. I find that answer to be part of the problem. We are all one. We all rise and fall together. There's no some of us survive and some of us don't. We either figure out how we make this work or the whole thing's going to go down the drain. I would have much rather have heard Donald Trump say something instead of being glib and like tit for tat. Well, if he's not going to defend me, I'm not going to defend him. I would have rather have heard an answer that said, I was aware when he was confronted with why didn't you defend Obama, I would have rather him said, I was aware that the questioner had a bias. I was aware that the question was opening up a potential can of worms. I felt my job was to diffuse the hatred that was inherent in the questioner's question. And I did that by dismissing him, by not giving his question any credibility. I didn't think it was an appropriate time, nor did I think it was my job at the moment to defend the president. I was much more concerned with watering down the hatred that the questioner attempted to inject into my press conference, because it is the hatred that divides us. That's an answer. That's the candidate I'm looking for. I'm looking for someone who doesn't want to play the game the way it's always been played. And I grant you that Trump is, he knows how to get in your face. But I don't think we necessarily need people who know how to get in your face. I think we need people who have principles, who have values, who have integrity, who show a history that under pressure they behave a certain way. And personally, I find that under pressure, Donald Trump always chooses what's best for Donald Trump at the expense of employees, at the expense of investors, and at the expense, by the way, in my opinion, of the legal system, because the fact that he supports eminent domain, the taking of private property for someone else's benefit, it's actually a distortion of the legal concept of eminent domain, which only allows for the taking of private property for a public good, for a public good, not because Donald Trump wants to build a row of houses or a new tall building on somebody's property and they won't sell their $100,000 home, so he takes it through a version of eminent domain and supports that. That's someone that concerns me, because while that isn't my house, what happens if it is my house? What happens if he's president and it's my city in Texas that he thinks, you know, could use a couple more Trump Towers, and now he's president? That's what concerns me. People are too enamored of image, and they get too enamored of cheap talk. We're ending 8 years of cheap talk, and it got us into a hellhole. I don't want to see us dig that deeper. I want to see us climb our way out of the one we're in and at least get back to level ground. And I don't think we get it by acting like a bully and thinking before we speak. And coming across as I'm the greatest, I'm the best, we're the greatest, we're the best. We're not the best and the greatest. We are the most amazing example of what humanity is capable of, living under something resembling liberty and freedom. We are human and we've made our mistakes too. We have to figure out how to go forward and be inclusive, but still lead with principles that inspire others. And I'm not just inspired by a lower tax bracket and a guy with a personally, I think he has a big mouth. I mean, I just think he has a huge ego and a mouth to match it. So didn't mean to do a whole tirade on Donald Trump, but again, I'm really concerned that I'm watching 2008 all over again. It's just a little more polished, and he comes with a little more experience, maybe a lot more experience. But he's still an egomaniac, and we're just about to get rid of the one we have. Steve, I'll take the last 2.5 minutes. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, just so we can wrap up, with the show subject, I think that the last point that, you know, getting back to the immigration issue, I think the kind of defining issue that, you know, that we have to look at immigration is that, you know, in years past, we didn't have social safety nets. And so the people that used to come here knew that they would have to come here to learn the language and assimilate into the culture. And, you know, I don't see that anymore. I think we've denigrated our culture internally, that we no longer respect the culture as we once did. You know, just the basics. When you go out, we now have two languages, English and Spanish. Although I do speak Spanish, I think we need one culture to assimilate into. I think the problem with Europe, going back to this immigration issue, is that it is a multicultural society, just because you have all these different countries that have been forced in together and forced in together by a currency and not by a culture. So, again, I think that the jury is going to be out on how they're going to assimilate all these people. And I think the last point that we've kind of skirted around the issue is that, just like as you said in the centers, people are coming in, escaping these cultures, and they're coming into a center in Germany that are welcoming them. But again, they differentiate right away. Well, although we come from the same country, you're a Christian and I'm a Muslim, and you know we're going to have to bow to the kneels. You have to bow and kneel to the Muslims. Or the commonplace attacks that you see on, you know, in Europe with the problems that they're having with the Muslims and the people from Great Britain, where there's been huge enclaves and huge communities that are built up in these centers, not assimilating
15
into
seconds,
you know,
Steve, 15
British
seconds.
Culture. That's it for today then, Carol.
Thanks for joining us. We hope we've got you thinking and coming back for more. We'll be back again on Thursday night at 6 or 6:30, but archived at your convenience. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
And you've been listening to Above the Fray podcast. Thanks for listening and spread the word.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.